Hey friends, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today we're going to keep going with this short series talking about the Ken Ham versus Bill Nye debate. I have my guest with me today, Ian Juby of Genesis Week. Good grief. I said it was Creation Week on the first podcast. It's Genesis Week. His website is ianjuby.org. That's Ian, I-A-N, Juby, J-U-B-Y.org. And so, yeah, today we're going to pick right up where we left off yesterday. Today we're going to start getting into some nitty-gritty stuff here, and we're going to look at several of the objections or arguments that Bill Nye put forth that Ken Ham just simply didn't have the time to answer. And, well, we're going to refute him. So with that, let's go ahead and jump right in. Another thing he kept bringing up, and he brought this up repeatedly, that the creation model, the young earth creationist model, cannot make predictions. He continued to trash the Christian perspective of, there are actually young earth creationists who are scientists, but he's trying to portray a situation where science cannot move forward. Science will never move forward in the minds of people who actually believe in a God of the Bible, a young earth creation. But he kept challenging Ken Ham for some kind of scientific predictions.
Yeah, and it's funny because in all that commentary, he was referring to the United States of America very patriotically, saying, you know, in order to compete in the world scientifically and engineering and in intellectualism and whatnot, we need to, you know, embrace evolutionism and stop, you know, refute this creationist nonsense, which is very ironic because the United States is one of the most successful technological countries, and it is also the country with the highest ratio of young earth creationists and people who believe in creation, even if it's an old earth creation.
There you go.
So, he doesn't realize he just contradicted himself. But, he was ranting and raving about
predictions.
Predictions, yes. He did kept saying predictions. Again, I would throw it right back at him. Okay, what predictions has evolution made?
Right.
It hasn't made any. And the ones it has made have failed. For example, what predictions has creation made? Well, here's one quick example. Dr. Russ Humphreys, whom I had on my show, my television show, just a couple weeks back, one of his, and the whole interview is online on YouTube now, archived on there. You can go and read it yourself. Back in, I think it was 1986, he made six different predictions about the magnetic fields of planets based upon the biblical account of creation. And basically his model was, okay, it appears from the reading of the scriptures that everything was initially made from water and then converted into, you know, iron, lead, all the heavier elements. And so his theory was simple. When God first created the water that made up the planets, all the atoms were aligned. Therefore, the magnetic fields of all these atoms were aligned. Once it was transformed, supernaturally, of course, into the planet itself, that magnetic field was preserved, but it now begins to decay. Now, based on that theory, he made six different predictions of the magnetic fields of planets, several of which had not yet been discovered. And the evolutionary models would also make predictions, you know, like we expect no magnetic field on this planet, for example. They expected no magnetic field past or present on the moon, for example. Russ Humphreys predicted that there was no magnetic field now, but there was a past strong magnetic field. Lo and behold, later on, when they actually mapped out the magnetic field of the moon, the magnetic signature recorded in the rocks of the moon, turns out the moon did have a magnetic field in the past, as well as, what planet was that? The lateral flows of one of the planets as well. I forget which planet. I'm thinking Neptune, but I might be wrong on that one. He, again, predicted that this planet would have had a much stronger magnetic field in the past. And at the time he made that prediction, the technology did not yet exist to measure the magnetic past magnetic field of that planet. And decades later, with one of the satellite flybys, they were able to measure the magnetic field stored in the rocks on the planet from space, which is pretty impressive. So, lo and behold, they fulfilled Russ Humphrey's predictions exactly, and with the exception of one sort of prediction, which actually the evolutionists modified to make fit, with the exception of one of them, every single one of Russ Humphrey's predictions, with the exception of one, which hasn't been fulfilled yet, were all fulfilled exactly. They were all found to be exactly right, while every single one of the evolutionary predictions was found to be exactly wrong. So that's only one example. Another example would be a good prediction would be, and again, a good prediction which evolution had failed at. Bill brought up Tiktaalik. Now, I love Tiktaalik because it was heralded as a huge victory for evolution. And in fact, that is exactly the way Bill portrayed it last night. Tiktaalik is supposed to be, you see, we're supposed to have evolved from fishes into land animals, right? And so, you know, 300 millions of years ago, a fish grew legs and basically walked up on land to become a four-legged creature called a tetrapod. And so they have a series of animals that they say, look, we can look in the rock layers. Here's one that's sort of got the precursor to the leg. This one's got slightly more developed legs. This one's got even slightly more developed legs. But we've got a gap in the middle here, sort of in between the two, right around the, you know, the 300 and I think it was 365 million year mark. And we're missing a fossil there. There's a missing link. And we're looking for a 365 million year old rock from where we should expect to find this. And so so they went looking for it. And they went actually to the Canadian High Arctic and looked at rocks that they thought were 365 million years old. Lo and behold, they find Tiktaalik, which in their opinion exactly matched what they were looking for as an intermediate fossil in exactly the correct age of rock they were looking for. So they heralded this as a fulfillment of a prediction. What they wound up discovering, actually, just a couple of years later, so this there was like an entire book devoted to this find, made huge headlines. The anti-theists on the internet just went stir-crazy. They just loved this because they love to mock the creationists and how evolution made a prediction. And there's a website called The Sensuous Curmudgeon. And they just jumped up and down about, you know, how exciting this was and how it clearly shows that the creationists are just idiots. And then a couple of years afterwards, in Poland, they found fossil footprints of a tetrapod in rocks that were at least, by their dating, 20 million years older than Tiktaalik.
Whoops.
Now, that's already a big problem because Tiktaalik was supposed to be evolving legs and feet. Here we had both. Fully formed, toes and everything. And this is also ignoring the fossil finds of John Mackay, a geologist, who back in the mid-80s documented and published on fossil tetrapod footprints in the bottom of Grand Canyon in the Tapete Sandstone, which is dated by the evolutionists as 500 million years old. So this is like 135 million years before Tiktaalik was allegedly supposed to have evolved. So what on earth are fully formed feet doing there before feet were supposed to have evolved? Well, the solution, of course, is simple. Tiktaalik didn't just figure out how to grow legs. He also figured out time travel. And, you know, so once he grew legs, he went back to Grand Canyon and wandered around the deserts for a while and then the beaches and left footprints and then went over to Poland for a while and walked around and, you know. So anyway, that's how you get – that explains how you get fossil footprints before feet have evolved. So
You know, on that making predictions, are you familiar with the RATE project?
Yes.
Can you tell my listeners a little bit more about that? That was another project that made predictions that came through with flying colors.
Yes, it did. And that gets really technical really fast, but I'll attempt to explain it briefly.
That's why I'm not explaining.
Okay. The first one that comes to mind has to do with the little tiny crystals called zircons. And what kind of a name is that anyway, zircons? That's a funky name. Sounds like something out of Star Trek. Anyway.
Scientology.
Yeah. Zircon crystals. They're little, you know, puny little crystals you find in the granite crust of Earth. Granite is a type of rock. And these crystals have uranium in them. Now, uranium is radioactive, and it breaks down into lead. Now, for every uranium atom that breaks down into lead, as part of the process, every time it emits radiation, it gives off 8 helium atoms. And so if you can picture it, it's almost like there's a little miniature helium generator on the inside of this zircon that's just pumping out, generating helium on the inside of this rock. Can you picture that?
Sure.
Okay. Now, of course, when you get a helium balloon, you know, you've probably had birthday balloons filled with helium before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What happens if you let them go?
Yeah, what happens if you leave them in the corner of the room for a week?
They shrivel.
They shrivel up.
And they start falling down to the ground.
Yes. And the reason is because the helium atom is so small, it actually leaks right through the plastic.
Oh, wow.
And they have what they call balloon snot, and that is what they call it, that they put in, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's sort of this sort of, yeah, it looks like snot, that they put inside the balloon and sort of squish it around to try and help keep the helium in as long as possible, right? But that's how small this helium atom is. So as you can imagine, it leaks right through the walls of this crystal. It's really fast. And even faster when you heat the crystal up. And so basically back in, I think it was the 80s, Dr. Robert Gentry was doing some research on radio halos, polonium halos and such. And he also was looking at the zircon crystals, and he said, wait a minute, there's a whole pile of helium in these crystals. Helium that was produced by radioactivity. And it should not be there. This rock is supposed to be 2 billion years old. Now, Gentry, of course, is a well-known young Earth creationist who's published dozens and dozens of peer-reviewed papers in the secular scientific literature. This was only one of them, and he just mentioned in passing that, hey, these crystals have all kinds of helium in them. They shouldn't be there. And so the rape team took that and ran with it. They said, okay, he's got a point. But nobody had ever measured the leakage rate of these crystals. How fast does that helium leak out? And so what they did was they said, okay, there's this much helium in the crystal. If the Earth is 6,000 years old, and therefore these crystals are 6,000 years old, in order to have that much helium in there, the helium has to leak out this slowly. And they made a prediction. And they mapped it out on a chart. Now, the evolutionists claim that rock is 2 billion years old. 2 billion, that's a big difference.
Boy.
And so they said, okay, if it's 2 billion years old, in order to have that much helium in it, it must leak out really, really slowly at this rate. And they charted both predictions on a chart. And the difference between the two is a factor of 100,000. So in other words, the speed the helium would leak out, according to a 6,000-year Earth model, would be 100,000 times faster than the 2 billion-year-old model. You follow me so far?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep.
They then sent the crystals to the lab and actually measured the leakage rate, the actual leakage rate. When you chart it out, it was bang on the 6,000-year mark, exactly nice. On the 6,000-year mark. So they fulfilled predictions and did multiple things. And, of course, once again, creation was the faith which the facts fulfilled, and evolution was the faith that the facts had failed. Again, the evolutionary model fell dramatically. What they did was they proved two things. They proved, one, that the rock was actually 6,000 years old, not 2 billion years old. And this was the basement crust of the Earth, by the way. So the rock was actually 6,000 years old, not 2 billion years old. Secondly, they said, well, wait a minute, there's 2 billion years worth of radioactivity that's gone on inside this rock. Therefore, 2 billion years worth of radioactivity occurred in less than 6,000 years. Therefore, radioactivity in the past was much faster than it is now. So in so doing, they just thoroughly destroyed all radiometric dating methods as well by that one simple experiment.
Whoa, okay. So perhaps natural laws were a little bit different back then.
Well, it depends, because radioactivity does vary. While it's quite solid, it varies depending on our position around the sun. The speed varies. There's other events as well, which
temperature.
Temperature. Temperature, it really doesn't affect it. It does affect it, but that was kind of the point, was it's incredibly, radioactive rates are incredibly stable. The speed of light affects radioactive decay. It's directly proportional. And that, of course, now, I this is a question I don't have an answer for. It is simply a question. There was an experiment done a couple of years back where they actually slowed light down inside a cube. I think it was ridiculous. It was like 35 miles an hour or something. It was just an unbelievable number.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
And so my question would be, okay, what's the radioactive decay rates inside that cube? Because radioactivity is directly proportional to the speed of light. Now, I don't know. It's a question. I'm asking. But obviously, if we can vary the speed of light, then we can vary the speed of radioactive decay. So, yes, it's quite solid, but it's not. We're still not venturing into the supernatural yet to even suggest that radioactive decay rates were faster in the past. We're still not venturing into the supernatural yet.
All right, guys, I'm going to stop right there. Again, that was Ian Juby with Genesis Week, also ianjuby.org. Now, tomorrow, guys, we're going to pick right up with where we left off today. There's so much more to talk about. There's still two more parts to this series. So don't miss out on tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're going to look at this challenge that Bill Nye kept busting out, saying that, show me some fish that were swimming to a different layer in the fossil record, in the geologic column. Show me fossils that are mixed around in different layers, layers that they should not be. We're going to address that tomorrow, and friends, you don't want to miss that. Friends, if you like these types of podcasts, if you like topics like apologetics, worldview issues, theology, cult research, creation, evolution, and the like, come on to my website, youthapologeticstraining.com, and also my new website that I'm going to be changing the ministry's name before too long to answerreadyministries.com. The website's kind of a ghetto right now, but I'm working on it, okay? Either one of those, and click on the podcast archive link. There's over 500 episodes on various worldview/apologetics type issues. They're all free, and they're all for you guys. So go and check that out. And with that, I love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.